It is a great pleasure for me to speak before you. I believe this is the first time I have spoken here. Usually when I come to Mumbai, I speak at IIT. I have been informed that here is the supreme destination for the future chemical engineers and researchers in chemistry. You are the chosen ones in this field. Yes, you have told me even more than IIT. Congratulations. I was thinking when we were driving here how as a little boy my parents, they would always push me. What career will you have when you get older? They're pushing very heavily. I was only 8 years old, and they were always pushing. Do you want to be an engineer? Do you want to be an investment banker? What do you think? And as a little boy, just 7 or 8 years old, I would just have to say something because, you know, you're supposed to say something. So maybe 1 month I would say investment banker. The next month I would say, you know, some kind of engineer. And as soon as I would say something, my mother would race to the bookshop and get all these books that were published, especially for little children. Your future as an investment banker. Your future as a chemical engineer. So, 1 month when I was 8 years old, I did say, I want to be a chemical engineer. And immediately my mother went to the bookshop, brought back child's book, you know, a chemical engineer. He had this picture of an engineer at a petroleum refinery, so he had a hard hat on and he was looking at various gauges. And then my mother got me a chemistry set for Christmas as a gift. So the pressure was on. Of course, as it turned out, I did not study engineering at the university. I studied social sciences. But I was thinking of those past years in looking out at you all. Now, I think that those of you who have come here tonight are very brave. I have been inquiring from our regular staff that comes from Radha Gopinath Mandir, and I have heard traces of evidence which lead me to believe that you all are brave and courageous to dare to use your intelligence, even partially. I know the pressure upon you is very intense. You have made it to the supreme destination, and your life seems to be already completely successful. If you can just withstand the pressure, hold your ground, and move forward, the opulences of heaven will fall upon you. If you can just hold on, if you can just hold your ground and push forward in spite of the pressure. And what is at the end of the rainbow? There's the pot of gold waiting at the end of the rainbow. I know that many of you desire to go to the USA, or if you choose to stay in India, you have your eyes on the USA standard of opulence. not only for yourself, but for your family. Therefore, you're willing to sacrifice extraordinarily now, and in the future too. You're willing to study long hours, and then when you move on to your PhD research, you're willing to undergo grueling, torturous schedules. And then, of course, when you enter the working world, you're ready to give your life almost for the purpose of whatever research your corporation will be doing. At one point in your life, however, we have to consider consequences. So much of engineering is about processes and results. What about our life? At least to a little degree, we must think about our life as a process which is going to bring about certain results. At least sometime of our life, we have to question ourselves. What is my goal? What is the quality of that goal I'm pursuing? Will it truly provide me with the happiness I seek? You see, the perception of happiness is in the mind, as well as the perception of distress. The mind has an extraordinary ability to delude us. Our own mind can cause us to not take note of what our intelligence perceives. I know so many of you understand with your intelligence that there has to be more to life than simply this intense struggle, this intense competition to get to the top. Your intelligence tells you that there has to be more than this. But the mind is so powerful, it can convince you not to reap the results of your own intelligence. The mind is subject to so much social pressure, peer pressure, family pressure. In this way, gradually your intelligence for analyzing your life gradually sinks more and more into the murky ocean of the mind. This is what is happening throughout the world. I travel on every continent, so I can very easily observe social trends. What I see happening more and more is the disappearance of analytical intelligence in terms of living your life and the supremacy of the mind in terms of happiness and distress. It's very rare today to find someone who can escape the power of the mind to delude yourself. In the ancient Vedic text, Srimad Bhagavatam, there's one Sanskrit expression, pashyannapi na pashyati. Although you are sufficiently experienced, although your intelligence knows some things, still you refuse to take note of what is right in front of your eyes. I'm going to ask you that just for a few minutes, you use your intelligence sharply in terms of your own life and view your life as an engineering process. I understand the pressures that you're under. Pressures that cause you to compete with your own friends and peers. Pressures that cause you to be afraid of others doing better than you. Still, I think it's possible for many of you to raise up your intelligence and use it as a beacon to pierce the fog produced by the powerful mind. How powerful is that mind? We'll discuss a little bit today. The power of the mind to make you miserable, even after you have obtained your successful career in opulence. I'm going to present to you latest research from large-scale social trends in affluent countries, because this is where you're going to, not in terms of geography simply, but also in terms of your mentality. You want the fine things that money can buy. You want the conveniences. You want the luxuries. There's no doubt about that. The corporations that you'll work for, they exist for profit. And your value to those corporations will be your ability to increase the profits for the shareholders. So much of life today is pushed on by this quest for increased financial return, which you hope will lead to increased happiness. Let us open our eyes to the wide-scale social trends that are happening and consider deeply, at least for a moment. Now, I know there's a fear that hearing this kind of knowledge, even though that knowledge can be shown to be well-founded upon research, well-founded upon reality, still there's a fear. Do I need to know these things now? In my very delicate situation now, in which I must focus intensely on my studies and then prepare for combat. Why now? Won't this information distract me? Won't I lose my competitive edge? I can't afford to do that. The hopes of my whole family rest upon me. I am to generate great wealth, and in this way set a wonderful example for others in my family. Nevertheless, I do believe that there is the intelligence available to rise above these powerful mental patterns. Please try to understand mental patterns which compel you. I know that all of you have the ability to think deeply and analytically if you would just have the time. So I'm going to give you something to think about with your fine engineering intelligence. I'm going to give you something to think about in terms of the power of the mind to make yourself miserable. This is what the affluent countries are now demonstrating, and it is all documented statistically. A lot of this research is coming from Yale University, some from Harvard. We would think that affluence, wealth, comfort automatically leads to happiness. No. The statistics are saying the opposite. That the increased affluence is leading to dissatisfaction and even to clinical depression more and more. Opulence, wealth, is based on choice. I have so many varieties to choose from. You can see that in India. When I first came to India in 1977, things were much simpler than now. Your car choices were limited. You all know these things better than I. Your television stations were limited. Everything was limited. But in the past 10 years, extraordinary choices are exploding everywhere. Indeed, there is just a flood of alternatives available. Does this make for a happier person? Let's discuss that. For example, in the USA, during the past 30 years, the gross domestic product has doubled, yet the number of people who are saying they're happy is decreasing, even to the point where clinical depression is increasing. You would think that the more society grows wealthy, then people become free to do whatever they want. Wealth leads to choices. Should I travel here or there? Should I buy this kind of wine or that kind of wine? Should I go to this restaurant or that restaurant? I was just reading on the internet, the New York Times, that's the most famous newspaper in the USA, and in their travel section, there was a big spotlight article. Don't be foolish. Don't overlook the fact that now Mumbai is one of the top jet setter club, party, and pub places in the world. Congratulations. Don't be foolish, the article exhorted. Understand what's happening. If you want the party, club, and pub scene, Mumbai is top-ranked place with all the other great party and club cities of the world. So, we would think wealth would give me a chance to choose this restaurant, that club, this kind of convenience, that kind of convenience. And this way I'll be more happy. But the facts are that this is how you become more depressed. Why? Because of the power of the mind. How can the mind bring all these things about? We're going to discuss that. We need to understand the characteristics of the mind. How, in spite of wealth and choice and opportunity, the mind brings you even to the point of depression. Now, let's see what kind of person you are. Social scientists have agree that people can fit into two categories, the maximizers and the satisfiers. I don't know what category you'd fit in. The maximizer is someone who always has to be thinking, what is the best choice to make now? What is the best kind of cell phone to get? What is the best restaurant to go to? What is the best airline to fly on? What do the consumer evaluations say about this product? Maybe some of you here are like that. Or you're hoping that your career success in the future will allow you to be a maximizer. Every choice I make has to be well researched. Everything I buy has to be the best. And then you begin to worry even after you commit yourself to make a choice. Maybe there was something better after all. Maybe I didn't get the best thing. Maybe someone else has the best thing. Then there are the satisfiers. They will settle for less than the best. Well, this looks good. It's good enough for me. We'll just leave it at that. You would think that most people would say, yes, I'll be satisfied with not everything, but just give me something. That's all. I'll leave it at that. I don't want endless things. Maybe so many of you here would say like that. But you see, the pressure to become a maximizer is so great, you're not able to resist. The desire is planted in you by society. You must have more. You must have better. And your family, your friends, they become captured by this mentality. And even you may try to resist. You can't, because you want your family. You want your friends. It's natural. So in this way, the number of maximizers is increasing, and the number of satisfiers is decreasing. It's very difficult now for people to say, this is good enough. I don't need anything more. That's because of the way the mind operates. It is impossible for the mind to be satisfied with materialism. Impossible. Therefore, as long as there's not a spiritual solution to existing in this world, you'll always be at the mercy of the deluded mind, which covers you like a cloud and prevents you from seeing how real intelligence operates. Now, let's say you admit to be a maximizer. A maximizer, remember, is someone who thinks, I've got to make the best choice, the most well-researched decision. I'm going to compare all the products, all the possible alternatives. I'm going to evaluate, do tests, read all the feedback available on the internet. And then I'll make my choice. Research has shown that such persons do indeed make better objective choices, but they are not happy about it. They get less satisfaction from this than the satisfiers, those who say, well, this looks good, good enough. There may be something better, but anyway, this is okay. I'll just take that. The way the mind functions is that you're not satisfied even after your great display of brilliance in making a choice. Why? Because you expect more from your deep investment, your big investment of mental energy. I researched this. I planned. I evaluated. I judged. I critiqued. And then I chose this option. So then you have huge expectations. Now I will be satisfied by my choice. The best choice. That's how the mind sets you up. And then you're disappointed. Therefore, those who are heading toward even clinical depression, they come from this maximizer group. But all of materialistic society is pushing everyone to be a maximizer. Get the best consumer products. Make the best choices. Just like in the field of employment, statistics in the USA show that the maximizers, those who work so hard to get the best job opportunity, They studied all the corporations. They prepared themselves for their interviews. They sifted through all the possibilities. They indeed got jobs that paid 20% more. But they were less happy. It's amazing. Yes, it's true. They got jobs that paid on the average 20% more than the other group, the satisfiers, who said, oh, well, you have to work. This is an okay job. Okay, I'll take this. The maximizers made 20% more money but were less happy inside themselves. This is very strange, isn't it? This is the power of the mind. Because when you invest so heavily in a choice, you set yourself up for disappointment. Think about that. There's something very strange at work in our life, and people are not being educated about this. Now, let's examine more about how the mind works in terms of dissatisfaction. In spite of your research capacity, in spite of your evaluating abilities. You see, the more choices you have, and choice comes from affluence, from opulence, the more you have to think, I took this choice, but what about all the other choices, which are also good? This haunts you all the time. This is how the mind works. There are 10 different types of products I could have chosen. I picked this one, but at the same time, my mind is haunted by the thoughts of the benefits of all the other products. It's strange how the mind works. For example, you might think, now you're all wealthy, you're working for, what's the big chemical corporation in India? Yes, you've got a good research post there, and you're picking out your luxury car. So you would think that when I get this luxury car, all thoughts of the other models of cars will disappear. I will just focus on this luxury car that I've gotten, and I'll be satisfied. No. The mind tells you that, but things don't work that way. For a short time only, you're satisfied. But then, once again, you start comparing your choice to all the other possibilities out there. This tendency is called adaptation. Something is new and fresh. Quickly, though, you become accustomed to it. And then discontent comes. If you can understand the power of the mind to act in this way, you'll save yourself so much trouble. You indeed may ask yourself, why am I struggling so hard? What is the point of it all? But then your mind will tell you, everyone struggles like this. Who are you to dare to be different? The hopes of the future world are riding on your shoulders. You must push forward. You have no time to think, no time to be reflective. Yet and still, I know that many of you do think about these things. And it's a question of when in time that these intelligent thoughts will become maximized. It may not happen overnight. I know that because of myself. When during my years at Yale, I certainly was not going to abandon my cherished attainment. Sometimes there's the fear that if I become Krishna conscious, I have to give up my education. I have to give up my career ambitions. No. I wouldn't have done such a thing. I didn't. I graduated. There's not an incompatibility between using your intelligence and maintaining a position in society. Very few persons are destined to become monks. That is well known. But everyone can be taught how to use their intelligence to fashion a properly balanced lifestyle between the spiritual and the material. You would all agree with that. But let me tell you what you're up against. You're up against this great pressure. And because the mind so easily deludes itself, and because there's so much pressure, a whole lifetime can be wasted. And that was my greatest fear when I finished university. If I make the wrong choice now, I could be washed away for 30 or 40 years. So when that time will come in your life in which you will do some major reevaluation and critical analysis, that's different for each individual. But I know it will come for some of you. So, we don't want to have regret. To make a choice and then feel that that choice was not the best thing. This is very burdensome. This is sad. The brightest persons, the most capable, competent persons are the ones who most risk clinical depression because they put such a burden of expectation on their own shoulders. This is what statistics show. They punish themselves. I should have known better. How could I have done that? I thought I had researched all the possibilities, and yet I made the wrong choice. Me, how could I have done that? Me. They punish themselves to such an extent that they actually become clinically depressed. The brightest persons, the most capable persons. What's contributing to all this unhappiness and mental instability is the flood of choices available to you. Did you know that studies have been done of children born in affluent families in the USA? 50% of those children say that our life is harder than our parents' lives were. Can you believe that? Why do they say that? What do you think? Why would they say that? Anyone? Any idea? Anyone can raise your hand? Why would the children of these affluent parents say, our lives are harder than our parents' lives were? Huh?
More choices.
Yes. Any others? Expectations, yes. That is a fact. The children say, so much is expected of us. There are so many more choices. There's so much of everything than ever before that we feel our lives are worse than our parents' lives. 50% of children of affluent parents in USA are saying like that. Life is becoming so hard because so much is expected of us, and there's so many choices, so many options. Now, what will be your role in this kind of society? Well, you have to decide that. So remember, there's the opportunity cost that although I've chosen this, there were 9 other options that were also good, and I missed out on them. Then there's adaptation. This is another mental tendency. I get something wonderful, but I quickly become accustomed to it. That thing loses its charm. And then there's regret. I made the wrong choice. What could I do? There were 30 alternatives. And I was wrong. I was just talking to some of my fellow monks, swamis, and one had gotten a donation of a laptop computer, and it was a Sony Vaio. So I just happened to mention, don't you know? I've seen the latest statistics, PC World Magazine. Sony Vaios have a 30% defect rate. He said, oh, no. Oh, no. Yes, I said 30% of the readers of PC World Magazine responded that their Sony Vaios were problematic. Said, oh. Of course, he's a Krishna conscious person, so it wasn't the end of the world for him. But still, you can see that in a regular person, materialistic person, there would have been just room for such lamentation. I blew it. I made a mistake. I got the wrong brand. Oh, how long do I have to live with this? Another mental tendency that social scientists have discovered is that happiness satiates and sadness escalates. Meaning, whenever your mind is so-called happy, it'll quickly become ordinary. It'll lose its charm. But whenever your mind feels sad, that sadness will quickly increase. This is a trick of material nature. Those of you who study Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam will recognize this trick as maya, illusion. The feelings that you get in your mind of happiness very quickly diminish. But the feelings that you get in your mind of sadness very quickly increase. Now, what kind of system is this? What kind of process is this? Furthermore, two social scientists that I know from Harvard University, they have discovered through research that people consistently underestimate how long good experiences, or consistently overestimate, sorry, how long good experiences will last. A pleasurable time, a good time. The mind is such that it thinks, oh, this is going to be a good thing, it's going to last a long time. It never lasts as long as the mind thinks. At the same time, the mind constantly underestimates how long a bad experience will last. Just see how material nature works. Now, these things are explained in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, but the modern person doesn't simply want to rest his case on that. You want to hear research, statistics. So I'm giving you that. What is well known in the Dharma Shastras is now being confirmed by social research. People consistently overestimate how long their good experiences are going to last. And they underestimate how long their bad experiences will last. There's something very powerful at work in our life. If you can understand the workings of the materialistic mind, you can save yourself so much trouble. We have to resurrect our real intelligence. That is the purpose of Krishna consciousness. How to raise up from the bottom of the mental ocean real analysis so that your life can truly be successful. We're not talking about wearing saffron, or we're not talking about withdrawing completely from the world. No, I haven't withdrawn completely from the world. I travel around the world twice a year. We're talking about making the best use of your life. And in order to do that, you must defeat this extraordinary mental power of illusion. So please try to understand this. Affluent societies are known for providing countless choices in every department. But those countless choices are leading to unhappiness. People's minds are not fulfilled by these countless choices. In fact, the rate of clinical depression is increasing. Although the economy may be booming, the mental depression is increasing. Where will you fit in with this kind of scheme that you have to think of? Is there something else to do with the mind other than being caught in this trap of constantly seeking newer and newer material opportunities? That is what wealth is all about. I was reading a statement by, what's his name, Larry Ellison, you know, the Oracle man. Because you're not software engineers, but, you know, Larry Ellison, he's now the third richest man in the world. He used to be number two. Because Bill Gates used to be number one. But actually, it's the one Swedish old man who owns an IKEA firm of pre-assembled furniture. He's now number one. So Bill Gates is two, Larry Ellison's three. I was reading a statement by Larry Ellison. He was saying, "I am a very happy man. I am worth $13 billion. I can have whatever I want. Why airplanes? I can have an airport. Why a yacht? I can have a whole port. I am so happy. I heartily recommend this to everyone." He said like that. But you know what his main anxiety is? Do you know? What he can't tolerate? He can't stand it when Bill Gates is glorified more than him. You think, hey, you're worth $13 billion. What do you care that Bill Gates has more? No, that's not the way the materialistic mind works. You can't be satisfied. Someone's got more than me. So on the one hand, he's saying like this, "I hardly recommend my situation to everyone. I'm worth $13 billion. I can have whatever I want. I'm a very happy man." Then you look at his face, you don't see it. And then you see him squirm whenever someone starts talking about Bill Gates. Now, I know you all would say, right, if you had $13 billion, if you were worth $13 billion, you wouldn't care, right, that someone had more than you, right? But that's not how the power of the mind works. There is such a thing, as Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, there's such a thing as the illusory energy. It captures you and never lets you be satisfied. So now you're thinking, well, if I had even $1 million, that'd be fine. So what if so many people had more than me? Big deal. No. The power of the materialistic mind will not let you rest in peace. You're caught in the grip of a very powerful energy that demands you must have more. You must have more. Never be satisfied. You must get more. The only way you can save yourself from this mental pressure is by taking up spiritual techniques. Otherwise, this powerful mind will choke you. And that's what the affluent countries of the world are discovering now. The social scientists are pointing out, Look where you're going. Look what's happening. Here are the numbers. Look at them. But there's no intelligence left anymore to draw back from this disaster. When I was at IIT, I asked a question. Let's see how you can answer it. I was telling them how in New Zealand, I'm based in New Zealand, I know that when corporations want to hire engineers, first they look for Indians. If they can't get Indians, who do they look for? Chinese. If they can find Chinese, then they look for their own people, New Zealanders. Now, why is that? What do you say? Yes, he says the Indian people are hardworking and intelligent. Demand less pay. Huh? They are satisfied. What else? Come on. At IIT, they were telling me things like, you know, the Indian engineers work in groups better. You agree? All right, come on. Okay, say more. Huh? I cannot hear it once again. They have good family values, so they don't, you know, they're not subject to their family breaking apart and alcoholism and all these things that plague the Western world, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, but then just think about it. The very things that give you the competitive edge are being destroyed by the values you're going to embrace. Isn't that a paradox? Isn't that you have a competitive edge because of Dharma. Indian life is based on restraint, controlling the senses, duty, obligation. What is the Western affluent life based on? Do whatever you feel at every moment. Don't worry about others. You have an obligation to your senses. This is the attraction of the West. I've heard it from so many Indian engineers overseas. The thing that I like the most about living in the USA, Australia, New Zealand, no family obligations, no social responsibilities. You're an individual. You can just do whatever you want. But as soon as I go back to India and have to visit my family, they want this, they want that, you know, cousins, cousin brothers, you know, this, that, on and on and on it goes. A whole village of them. But when I leave and I go back to Australia, back to USA, it's just me. Me and my senses. What a feeling of liberation. So, you have your competitive edge because of a culture that has produced discipline, restraint, stability. Yet, what you're embracing will destroy all that. This is the great paradox. Think about it. It's hard to escape this, though, because of the power of the mind to surrender to illusion. We must have something stronger than this illusion. That is why now, just like in the past, we must take shelter of Bhagavan Sri Krishna's teachings in Bhagavad Gita. Actually, the culture of stability and obligation and duty in India is based on It's a remnant of Sanatan Dharma, the spiritual culture described in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. If we turn our backs on even the remnant of that culture, all competitive advantages will be lost. As the senses go wild, watching all those movies, right? Yeah, you all know. You go to those movies and wow, yes. Look at all the things we've been missing. Right?
Yeah.
Wow, can't wait to get to Los Angeles, Chicago, New York. Wow. You surf on your TV and look at all the TV shows brought over by satellite. Yes. You visualize yourself with all the products, all the luxuries. But those things will destroy the very culture or the remnant of the very culture that has given you discipline, stability, clarity. So as I said, in New Zealand, corporations have told me, first we look for the Indian engineer, then the Chinese engineer. The last we look for is our own New Zealanders. Why? Because we know our own people. They'll come to work drunk. They'll be distraught because of, their third wife, their third marriage crumbled. They'll be distraught because, their kids are, taking drugs at the age of 12. So we don't want to go through all that. We want pure productivity at the cheapest price. So think about it. What makes you think that your mind is going to become free of all this illusion automatically? I know what so many of you are thinking. Swamiji, we know about these things, but we're sure that when we go to the USA, we're not going to be that bad. Right? We're not going to be excessive. How do you know? Do you understand how the mind deludes you so easily? How the mind fools you, cheats you? And what to speak of your children? What are you going to explain to your children? When your children tell you, we don't want to follow this Indian stuff. We want to be Americans. We want to be Australians. What are you going to say? Well, that's too much now. That's too much. Your mother and I have become liberal, but you're going too far. What are you going to explain to them? Therefore, it's best to go the other direction, to master the mind with spiritual intelligence. You don't have to be a Swami Brahmachari to do that. You can do that in your own home if you have proper direction and guidance. I appeal to you all that maybe not tonight, but sometime in the future, please think about these points deeply and devise an action plan. It doesn't mean abandoning your career. Why should you abandon your career? You have your career. I also have a career. This is my career. I travel all over the world looking for truly intelligent persons. All the different types of careers can work well cooperating in Krishna consciousness. That is Krishna's plan in Bhagavad Gita. Arjuna was a military man. He was not a sadhu, yet Krishna spoke Bhagavad Gita to him. So certainly an engineer can become Krishna conscious. Please be shrewd enough to understand the deluding power of the mind, which seems to delight in so many possibilities for pleasure, for enjoyment. You know the feeling you get when you have a remote control in your hand and you're in front of a TV and you can just... That's what you want out of material life. You want to be able to choose endless combinations, just like with a remote control in your hand. Choose endless varieties of cars, watches, cell phones, clothes, and soon it'll be choosing endless options for relationships. That'll come next. Why just one wife? Get rid of her. A new model, a new number. That's happening now in the USA. Divorce is rising amongst Indian immigrants. You know all that, yes? Your mind becomes affected by the atmosphere that you're in because there's no spiritual intelligence to pierce through that fog. And then what about your children? You see, each generation goes further and further out. You're saying, I won't be that bad. And then your children, they'll say, well, we want everything that they have in USA and Australia, but we're not going to be as bad as the American or Australian kids. But each generation sinks lower and lower. Don't be fooled by all this. Pierce through this mental illusion. Master that powerful mind with the torchlight of spiritual knowledge. Then your life will be successful. Keep your job, keep your family, that's all right. But keep spiritual intelligence in the center of your life. Then you can control that powerful mind and make it work for you. That's why Lord Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, for one who masters the mind is the best of friends. But for someone who cannot control the mind is the worst enemy. So I've been describing today how the enemy mind works. How do you make the mind your friend? The easiest way is through the processes of bhakti yoga. Transcendental loving service to Lord Krishna. Takes your mind out of the mud of material contamination. And then your mind in Krishna consciousness becomes saturated with Krishna's spiritual potency. In this way, your intelligence awakens and you can analyze things properly. And you're not fooled anymore by the dense darkness of mental ignorance. Please think about these things. I don't expect that you're all going to react at once. Wouldn't that be interesting if all of a sudden everyone in this room stood up, Swamiji, you are right. We are immediately going to put this into action. I don't expect that. Don't worry. I'm just trying to embed something on your hard drives. And at some point in the future, you at an appropriate time, you know, that information will be accessed. All right. Are there any questions?
Basically, when you said you should have spiritual intelligence and move towards Krishna consciousness, what I want to say is that you can either then consciousness.
We're all what?
Basically, I'm empty. That is why I'm always escaping. Basically. And basically, what I'm saying is, when I was materially very conscious, I was escaping from achieving things.
Yes.
But now that I've got something better than that, something more permanent than what I was getting earlier, I've substituted that material consciousness with the spiritual consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And basically there is only substitution, but there is no, I get something better than that, I will go for it. But there is no fundamental change from where I am going. There is only something better which I have got, a spiritual consciousness. That is where I come from, the material consciousness. So what I am saying is that we are only substituting this. We are not getting anything. What I want to say is, we are getting benefit, but we are only substituting.
How long have you been practicing Krishna consciousness for?
Oh, I'm just telling you, I'm just asking you.
He's not a practitioner.
Uh-huh.
He said it's a...
Basically, in every aspect, where if I get something better than what I'm getting right now,
yes,
and I'll just opt for the better. I'm just asking a general question.
Yes. Yes, there's no harm in substituting Krishna consciousness for materialistic consciousness. In fact, Lord Krishna asks you to do that in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says you cannot give up the lower consciousness unless you get the better consciousness. But by your getting the better consciousness, the Krishna consciousness, you become transformed. You're not the same person. The mind of darkness that encased you becomes illuminated by spiritual intelligence. You don't see the world in the same way. Just like you are a future chemical engineer, researcher. Yes?
He's doing research now.
Right. If you bring me into the laboratory, will I see what you see? No. Yeah. The last time I studied chemistry was in high school. In university, I did not study chemistry. So, if you bring me and show me your research, will I be able to see anything? No. You have become transformed, so to speak, by your research. Similarly, you'll become transformed by the Krishna conscious experience. By following Lord Krishna's instructions in Bhagavad Gita, you will see a qualitative transformation. So, just like you enter the chemical laboratory, Lord Krishna is asking you to enter the bhakti laboratory. Become a bhakti researcher. That is the point. Enter the laboratory and see the results. Be objective. Be clinical. Don't let the mind dissuade you. There's fear. Oh, if I start to dabble into Krishna consciousness, I could lose my academic competitiveness. That is not so. These are just reasons the materialistic mind gives to perpetuate, to continue the ignorance. Remember, the very competitive edge that Indian students have in the world is because they're coming from a culture that in the past was based on Dharma. Now you push that culture aside, you're going to become like everyone else. Therefore, use your intelligence and get to the root of all this. I've given you the explanation, the statistics, the analysis of how in the most affluent countries of the world, there is increased depression, increased unhappiness, in spite of all the options and choices that wealth can provide. Some years ago, there was an official global survey done as to what is the happiest nation in the world. Who are the happiest people in the world? It's called the Global Values Survey. Do you know which nation was number one? Bangladesh, the poorest nation in the world, by all social scientific criteria, was the happiest nation. Now, how does that make sense? Countries like USA, Germany, England were like number 15, 16, 17, 18. The poorest country is the happiest. This violates all our material conceptions. An intelligent person will think about these things and push to the conclusion. We must arm ourselves with genuine spiritual knowledge. Otherwise, the mind is so powerful, the materialistic mind is so powerful, it will just ruin your whole life with false expectations. Remember, I told you, 50% of the children born in affluent families in the USA say their life is worse than their parents' lives are. Because of the pressure of expectation, the higher you up, the higher you are on the tree, the greater the distance to fall. So there's so much fear and anxiety. What we need in this world is the example of persons who can balance their material and spiritual life properly. That is what we need. That balance has to be there because material happiness will not satisfy you. The materialistic mind is so powerful, it will just destroy your own life. That is the power of the mind, to cheat you. You get something, you think, I'm going to be so happy with this. And very quickly you become dissatisfied, even to the point of depression, because you've had such high expectations, which are never fulfilled. All these things are explained in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, but because you are scientists, I'm giving it to you in a clinical way. Anything else?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. So my question is that we the students are living in the hostel or college with study of with pressure of the study and all the other things. So at that particular moment it is somewhat we can concentrate our mind, it is somewhat stable. But as soon as we go out of the college campus or the hostel in the market or any place, our mind fills with clever things like movies, fashion, advertisements, etc. So is it the human mentality that, is it always possible that our mind fills with these things or we can overcome through these things?
If you revive your dormant spiritual intelligence, your Krishna conscious intelligence, you can rise above this contamination that's everywhere. You have to know how to live in a toxic environment. That is the point. You have to learn how to deal with that. Toxic environment all around you. Yes, through the development of Krishna conscious intelligence, you can thrive even amidst a polluted environment. But you have to learn the proper techniques. So you're saying that when you're studying in the hostel, things are okay, stable, but as soon as you go outside the campus, you have is this institution mostly all men? What percentage of ladies? 30%. When in the USA, the top schools were all men for so many decades, because the educators knew that you put man and woman together in classroom, they will not be concentrated academic work. So when I went to Yale, my first year was 1968, and at that time, Yale was all men. It had been so for hundreds of years. Then in 1969, they brought in the women, and they put them in a separate dormitory. Then in 1970, they put the men and women in the same dormitory, but on different floors. Then in 1971, they put the men and women on the same floors, sharing the same bathrooms. And that's the way it's been ever since. How do you think you would do in such a academic environment? So, obviously your institution here still has some decent arrangements. I don't know for how long, though. You go to the movies, you see what Bollywood, Hollywood is giving, so you'll be demanding, make our school like this. Right? Yes? Right? Yes. My mother, when she found out what was going on at Yale, she was just horrified. I'll never send another one of my sons to this place. But this is where most of the presidents of the USA are coming from. Both Bushes came from Yale. The man who ran against Bush, Kerry, he came from Yale. It's all a big club. So, if our leaders do not know how to control their mind, what kind of world is it going to be? So you're thinking, well, what can we do about that, right? We're just trying to get our share of the dream, right? Okay, while you're trying to get your share of the dream, we're just asking, please devote some time to developing spiritual intelligence so that you're not victimized by the power of the mind, which makes things so bad that even when you get what you want in terms of material opulence, you become clinically depressed. Sad, isn't it? Other questions?
Thank you very much, Maharaj, for the wonderful discourse. My question is, what you explained, what I understood, in US people are frustrated, they are under depression. But being Indian, I am not depressed. I am happy. So why should I bother about their depression? They are depressed, so they are thinking about that. I am happy being in India. So why should I worry about their depression?
Because what's over there is coming here. In case you haven't noticed. You want what they have, but you have to pay the price. What's the price for getting what they have? You become miserable. All those things you see in the movies make you miserable. Families break apart, drugs, alcoholism, violence, clinical depression, all these things come from a culture that refuses to teach people how to control their senses. how to understand the tricks of the mind, the illusions of the mind. So it's very important for you to understand these things, because these things are coming here. I already told you, I read in the New York Times on the internet the announcement, don't be foolish and think that Mumbai is just a traditional city. No, you should understand it is now one of the party, club, and pub capitals of the world. What do you say about that? You know what your mind tells you when you go to the cinema. You know. When you watch television, all the shows, TV shows that come from the USA, in which everyone looks so casual, right? And you're always laughing, right? They have whatever they want, right? And you're thinking, oh, that is life. That's what I want. Don't be fooled. It is not like that. Therefore, the greatest responsibility of India is to teach the world what is true happiness. That is the greatest engineering assignment for India. How to engineer genuine happiness. What is the formula for that? So I decided to work for a company that can produce that formula. I'm an engineer too. I'm in the laboratory all the time. Of course, there are the specialists, and not everybody is meant to be a specialist. But at least everyone should have some basic knowledge of the power of the mind to delude you and ruin your life, and the power of spiritual intelligence, Krishna consciousness. Other questions?
Hare Krishna, how can we start balance between material and spiritual
activity? How can I become a chemical engineer, a researcher? What should I do? Huh? What should I do? But I need some good guidance, yes? I need some good teachers, yes? Huh? He said, just get a good institution that has a reputation of being good. It may not have good teachers, it doesn't matter, just the reputation, right? I hope there are no teachers here from this institution, huh? Hare Krishna. Well, I know when I went to Yale University, most of the teachers there were definitely like the best in the world. I can say that, and by their guidance, I could further my studies. I was looking for the truth, so they let me study whatever I wanted. My teachers told me, we wish we would have done what you're doing, trying to study and find out what is the ultimate goal of everything. So they let me cross over all, generally you pick a particular course of study and you stick to that. They let me just go anywhere I wanted. I would study so many different types of things, history of science, political science, of revolutions, philosophy of the self. I was just trying to find something for real. So I can say, from the material point of view, that these teachers were very gifted, and by accepting their guidance, my academic abilities increased. So if you want to make that balance between materialism and spiritualism, you need guidance. You need the tutelage of experienced Krishna conscious persons to show you how to do it. Otherwise, you may just say, oh, this Krishna consciousness sounds so nice, but it's just for the sadhus. You can just dismiss it like that. Just like I could say, oh, chemistry, that's just for the engineers. But you would say, no, no, every person, every educated person needs a little bit of knowledge of chemistry, right? No, it's just for the engineers. Then you would probably try to show me. Even in your everyday life, you're dealing with chemicals. You don't know it. You don't realize it. But what we are doing is affecting you. Right? Right? So similarly, in spiritual life, you need someone who can point that out. You are making decisions day long, night long, that are affecting your life and your next life and your future births. Mm-hmm. Good guidance can point those things out. So that's what's required to develop this balance. Then it becomes easy. Otherwise, it is difficult to live a spiritual life in the material world. I agree, it is difficult without good guidance. Anything else? Do I think that all our...
Is it true that all our activities are predetermined?
At every moment, you are bringing the burden of your past as you create your future. Your past is affecting you. And simultaneously, you're creating future options. So, at every moment, there's a mixture of the past and your creative choices for the future. The very body that you have is a burden from the past. Your body is a collection of your past karma. And with that body of past karma, you generate new karma for the future. You see, material science is so expert at studying the actions and reactions of matter. But what about the actions and reactions of consciousness? That is an unknown field. But you'll find that information in Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam. The topmost research work is to understand the reactions of consciousness. And what is consciousness in perfection? Pure consciousness. So it's not that everything is predetermined. Some things are. Anything else? Yes?
When do we get complete satisfaction?
When do we get complete satisfaction? What do you think? When in your life have you been completely satisfied?
After every satisfaction, the another expectation is there.
Right. As these Harvard psychologists have pointed out, people constantly overestimate how long their experiences of happiness will last. And they constantly underestimate how long their periods of distress will last. This is the power of the mind to cheat you. Full satisfaction cannot come from matter or material arrangements. Full satisfaction comes from spirit. Krishna is the supreme spiritual consciousness, and we are part of Krishna as individual units of spiritual consciousness. True happiness is in the relationship between Lord Sri Krishna and ourselves. If you want real happiness, you must escape the clutches of the material mind. It's actually easier to live a spiritual life. It's so much cheaper because your mind is not agitated all the time by, let me go to see this movie, let me buy this, let me buy that, travel here, that. It's so much easier to live a life of inner contentment. All right? So I thank you all for listening with attention. I hope I've explained some things that will be of value to you. If not immediately, maybe in the future. I wasn't always doing this job, although I have been doing this job for over 30 years. The first time I saw devotees of Krishna, practitioners of Krishna consciousness, was on television my last month at Yale University. And you know what my reaction was when I saw such persons? What did you think? Huh? You think I thought, oh, it was very interesting. No, my first reaction was, these people are fools. What is all this talk about spiritual things? That was my first reaction. Obviously, I was completely under the control of a materialistic mind. But then I began to reconsider. I began to study Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and then I could see this is actually the best way to live. This is the most intelligent way to live. So there you have my confession. How do we turn our mind toward Bhagavad Gita? By opening the book. First, you have to get a genuine Bhagavad Gita. That's why we offer Bhagavad Gita as it is, genuine, just as Lord Krishna spoke it. And then you read it, just like you study so much literature for your chemical research, preparing in that way. So, similarly, you study the Krishna research. Bathe your mind in Lord Krishna's words. That is how to read Bhagavad Gita. Get a genuine Bhagavad Gita. We can make that available. And then read it from beginning to end. While you're doing your studies. It's not that every moment of the day you're studying, right? You go to some movies sometimes, right? What else? Some clubs, right? Yes, yes. Dancing, you go clubs, dancing. Huh? Yes, of course. You spend time joking with your friends, right? So you can spend some time of the day reading Bhagavad Gita. But generally everyone will say, oh, I can't, I'm so busy, I have so much studying to do. As if you're studying 24 hours a day. Here, do the students go drinking on the weekend? No? No. Huh? So you don't admit? No, no. You know what they told me at IIT? They told me 80% are drinking on the weekends. But not, this is a different institution, yes? Okay. Some are answering by... So my point is you do have time for your spiritual development. So don't let your mind feed you this propaganda that, oh, we're so busy, we simply study all the time. I know it's not true. Add Krishna consciousness to your life and then you'll be successful. Follow the instructions of Lord Krishna. Krishna is the best engineer. Krishna is the smartest engineer. All right.